Chapter 27. Distress Signals. When the walls come tumbling down, when you lose everything you have, you always have family, and your family always has tribe.
Family. It wasn't a word I'd had much use for, nor a concept I'd felt any connection to. I had never known my father, a quite uncommon situation for a filly growing up in stable too. When my mother had been my age, she'd spent a large portion of her time being... Well, there were other words I could use to describe other ponies, but this was my mother, and for her I chose the words promiscuous and inebriated. Growing up, I did have my mother, but my memories of her were largely of the sit quietly while the grown-ups are talking variety. However, she did teach me games, and even I came to realize, even as a blank flake, that she did so more to alleviate her own boredom than my own. I cherished each happy memory of playing with her, every game of boards and strategies and brightly colored pieces that this table had to offer. But even then, I never really thought of us as family in a way that attached special meaning to the word. Now, through a haze of pain, I realized this was changing. Had changed already, in fact, without my knowing. With the painkillers worn off and adrenaline no longer propping up my body, I could feel just how much pain I was in. The bandages had helped and probably spared me from bleeding out through the deep slashes in my chest. However, continuing to push myself while injured had harmed more than just my magic. But I was with my friends now. There was a feeling of completeness and safety. My body could finally relax and just hurt. Velvet Remedy had slipped into mother-doctor mode almost at the sight of me. Now that I wasn't mentally sniffing between her hind legs anymore, I found myself comforted by her fretful ministrations, particularly considering that she did a much better job of mothering me than my actual mother ever had. In truth, these ponies have become my family. Family in that deeper sense of the word that means finding home, not just from the location you're at, but through the people you're with. And my family was having an argument.
"She's a zebra,"
Steelhooves exclaimed. He kept his silence until we were well away from the wall. But as we had approached the crumbling ruins of Java's Cup, Steelhooves had finally questioned the presence of my new companion. I made the mistake of simply saying she was a friend. "Yes, she is." I was weary and hurting. My breathing was shallow, and I felt like I was constantly drowning. I wanted the bath to wash off the blood caking my coat, the stinging powder still chewing at my flank, and the last of the nasty, biting insects that were somehow surviving alongside me. And I wanted a bed that was at least softer than cement. What I did not want was this argument.
"Who has clearly manipulated you into trusting her," Steelhoof surmised. "You can't trust them."
Zenith had wisely remained silent, simply choosing to follow as we moved away from the wall in the slave pits of Stern's Philadelphia. But now, settled and perhaps feeling bolstered by my assertion of friendship, the zebra retorted, "The war is long over, and I had no part in it. Just because I have stripes does not make me an enemy combatant, any more than that armor makes you a soldier in Nightmare Moon's army."
"Brilliant." "Princess Luna's army,"
snapped the Steel Ranger, who had indeed served in the war 200 years over.
"Not that your kind has any right to even speak the name."
He turned to me.
"Little Pip, what are your intentions regarding the zebra? Tell me you don't actually expect her to travel with us."
"Oh, heavens no," Velvet Remedy chimed in. "I'm sure she doesn't. After all, it would just be foolish to travel with the sort of creature known for degenerating to mindless flesh-eating." Zenith drew up, staring at the charcoal-coated unicorn with a look of bewilderment bordering on resentment. "Oh, wait, those aren't zebras," Velvet casually finished. "Those are ghouls." Steelhoof stopped now, too, and I was sure that behind his visor he was glaring. Zenith huffed, still confused. In her exotic accent, she slowly asked Velvet, "Are you saying I look like a ghoul?" I hung my head. This was going downhill fast. Velvet Remedy's eyes widened as she realized how Zenith had taken the statement. "No, of course not," she assured the newcomer, then cryptically mused. "But some pony here sure smells like one." Zenith sniffed at her own coat. I rolled my eyes. Then, just to be sure, sniffed at my own. and gagged a little. I was rank. Calamity swooped up to us. He had been waiting for us in front of Java's, Spitfire's thunder held in his mouth. Java had apparently been, based on the large sign collapsed over the door, a milk-covered stallion whose mane was a wavy light brown with dark brown streaks, and whose cue mark was a steaming cup of what I hoped was coffee beans. But when we stopped moving forward, he decided to close the gap himself. He landed next to me, slipping the magically enchanted anti-machine rifle into a newly fashioned holster on his battle saddle, and offered Zenith a hoof and smile. Well, howdy. I wanted to kiss him, which was not a desire I normally associated with bucks. Zenith looked hesitant. She reached out with a hoof tentatively, and then shrank back, wide-eyed as Calamity took it in both forehoofs and shook vigorously. Pleased to meet you. I'm Calamity. Her foreleg was still shaking after he let go. Welcome to the team. This is it? She asked cautiously, still looking at Calamity as if she'd never seen a Pegasus before, which I realized suddenly was probably the case. Oh, shucks, Calamity said, still grinning. I saw you all through the scope. Clearly little Pip here trusts you, and if she trusts you, that's good enough for me. Yes, Velvet said in a drawling yet ladylike sigh. Because little Pip's judgment has been Celestia tier recently. She was looking over my injuries with growing dismay. Okay, yeah, it was a stupid plan. I'm sorry. I looked to my friends desperately. I knew it was going to be bad in there, and I didn't want to put any of you through that. I know I should have trusted you to handle yourselves, and that we should have stayed together. We're stronger together. I'm pathetic without you. I collapsed to my knees, suddenly overcome with fatigue. Velvet Remedy's horn began to glow as she waved everyone else to be quiet and stand back. A moment later, my unicorn friend gasped. By the goddesses, Little Pip, what happened to you in there? Velvet Remedy knelt next to me as I stretched out on a mattress in what had once been a child's bedroom. We had invaded a small apartment building that had once shared a Philadelphia city block with Java and his cups. I could see the others in the next room. Calamity was sorting through the small items he had scavenged from the apartment. Zenith was cooking. Steelhoofs was glowering. I gotta wonder why they even bothered, Calamity mused as he stared at the boards which he had pried from across the door an hour ago. They now served as wood for a cook fire. Ain't like any pony who's determined and capable enough to brave inner city ruins is gonna be stopped by a couple planks of wood. Why bother boarding up the door in the first place? Zenith had found some cooking pots and was brewing something sweet-smelling over the fire. Several other pots sat around her, each waiting for its turn under the flames. I marveled at our good fortune. Ever since I'd left homage, I had bemoaned our lack of a skilled chef. I winced. What I wouldn't give to see her right now. Instead, she was in mortal peril, and I felt myself flush with angry guilt that I wasn't doing something to help her right that instant. I cursed Red Eye. Why did he have to go after homage? I don't figure he did, Calamity suggested from the other room. I reckon he's aimed at DJ Pony. Buck's been broadcasting good things about you for a while now, so that probably gets him chalked up as a friend that Red Eye figures you'd want to keep from harm.
Assuming that he hasn't simply surmised that you want to keep every soul from harm, Steelhoofs added grimly. And that you will go to absurd and dangerous lengths to do so.
I felt the urge to remind him that it was a Steel Ranger elder who pitched the plan, but I bit back. Steelhoofs had never suggested or pressured me to go along with the solo mission, merely supported me when I made the decision to. Considering the tones of his previous conversation with Elder Blueberry Saber, I suspected Steelhoofs would have just as swiftly backed me if my decision had involved telling her to sit on my horn and spin. I looked from Steelhoofs to Calamity, again struck by the difference between them when it came to support. Calamity was loyal. Steelhoofs was obedient. Not necessarily to me, but to whomever he accepted as in charge. He was a soldier buck, even now. Velvet Remedy's glowing horn passed over me once more. She was making sure she had found every injury. As I had expected, my broken rib and punctured lung had drawn the most reaction from her, including a whole host of dark looks at Zenith that Steelhoofs couldn't match. But she commended the zebra on not feeding me any healing potions, voicing confidence in her mending spells. She gasped as she started to pass her horn over my tail.
Little Pip!
She leaned close, her voice scandalized and sympathetic.
How did you get wounded there?
That wasn't me, Zenith's voice sounded from the other room.
What?
Calamity looked up tensely.
We were at Little Pip where now?
I buried my face in my forehose, feeling my cheeks redden with embarrassment.
Never you mind,
Velvet told the Pegasus sternly as she opened her saddlebags and floated out an array of medical supplies. Calamity scavenging had restocked as well in that regard. It didn't help that my worry over homage had brought with it half-formed daydreams of that wonderful unicorn kissing that very wound to make it better. Gracefully returning us to the earlier conversation, Velvet Remedy suggested,
I know you're worried about homage, but please try not to let it eat at you. Remember, so long as Red Eye doesn't act on his threat, he has something to threaten you with. Once he does, all he has is an angry little Pip. And if he's half as smart as you make him out to be, then he's plenty bright enough to know that he doesn't want that.
I bit my lower lip. Calamity stood up, shaking his head.
I hate to be the voice of worry, but...
The Pegasus paused uncomfortably, brushing a hoof over his orange mane.
Well, I figure if he put that Meg spell at Ten Pony Tower, he must have done so before he'd hatched this plan to use you. So the only thing keeping him from using it is that deal of yours.
I frowned. So, do you think he'll set it off the moment he knows the guys is dead? I hadn't even considered that. That is, if I even do that. Calamity nudged his hat.
I don't rightly know, but DJ Pony is a dissenting voice with a huge audience.
Calamity's frown deepened.
Most dictatorships I know of tend to go hell and high water to either discredit or destroy opposing voices like that.
I almost asked of how many dictatorships Calamity knew, but the words died on my lips as a memory floated to the surface of my mind.
Don't you believe him, Calamity had once told me. The Enclave has a vested interest in making any pony who bucks their ideals into a monster.
Instead, I nodded, trying to give him a supportive look.
Stern cuts out the tongues of any who speak ill of Red Eye, Zenith reminded me, putting a little extra loathing into the Griffin's name.
I spent several years speaking nothing so that I might keep mine, she added.
It is good to finally use it freely again.
Steelhoofs grunted.
Now that we're all together, I don't see why we don't just call his bluff. Fly in and level his operation. Take him out.
I sighed deeply.
First, because taking him out wouldn't be that easy. Elder Blueberry Saber was right about that. He's always protected, and he can get out faster than we can get to him.
What I didn't say was that I wasn't sure I wanted to flatten his operation. In fact, I was sure that I didn't want to destroy the work he was doing. I wanted to free all the slaves. But that wasn't the same thing. Was it? Damn it. It was easier to know my moral stance before I discovered the evil fucker was also, as I could best see it, right. He was building a better future. Or, at least parts of one. And he was sacrificing everything for it, from his own home to your freedom. I recalled a conversation with Watcher regarding how, without what he called the spark, the virtues he valued could become twisted, lost parodies of themselves. I had found another in Red Eye. Generosity. Even generosity could wander down twisted, dark paths, especially when you're trying to give away something that shouldn't be yours to give. Steelhoofs nickered.
You don't actually believe Red Eye has a mega spell, do you?
I grimaced.
An undetonated balefire bomb. When would he have acquired something like that?
Steelhoofs questioned.
Where? It's not like you can just stumble over something like that laying around.
Velvet Remedy, Calamity, and I exchanged looks.
Oh no,
Steelhoofs groaned.
What did you three do?
The building was silent, save for the crackling of the fire and the bubbling of the cookpot, for several long minutes in the wake of our explanation.
You gave a balefire bomb over to New Appaloosa,
Steelhoofs exploded, pacing in his heavy armor, his metal-sheathed tail flicking in emphasis with every word.
A town notorious for trading with Red Eye slavers.
Yep.
Which one of you idiots came up with that idea?
Steelhoofs demanded. I silently tore through my memories. I remembered being concerned about sending the freed slaves back to New Appaloosa. Stunningly, I couldn't recall having the same concerns about giving them a mega spell. Calamity raised his hoof, a chagrined expression on his face.
"This is," Zenith asked, "why they call you Calamity, yes?"
Velvet Remedy moved to sit by Calamity's side. Steelhoofs was fuming.
"You do realize that Red Eye is the only reason there is even a New Appaloosa, right?"
His visor turned towards us and only found blank expressions.
"That place was a small town dying in the dust before Red Eye pranced in and gave them a water talisman. You've got to figure they owe him."
Calamity shook his head, genuinely surprised. "Sorry, partner, but that one's new to me." I, however, merely groaned, putting my hooves over my eyes.
"I saw the bounty of our stable shared, the water talisman given to a struggling town which now knows the joy of clean and pure water."
Homage was going to die, and it was all my fault. My pit buck was clicking at me, not letting me ignore the water I was bathing in was radioactive. Velvet Remedy had a dose of Radaway sitting nearby for me to consume as soon as I got out of the grossly stained tub. Pure water was a rare treat in the wasteland. Even those who had it did not think to squander it on baths. Not unless they lived someplace with a water talisman like Tenpony Tower, at least. And in the Philadelphia ruins, all the water to be found was irradiated. The clicking of my pit buck reminded me that my weeks in the Equestrian Wasteland had been, in many ways, blessed. I had avoided some of the more repulsive hardships that many ponies faced every day. I had never been reduced to drinking radioactive water from the bowl of a toilet. There wasn't much of a wall left between this apartment's bedroom and the living room, so I was effectively bathing in front of them. Zenith was still tending her boiling pots. Velvet Remedy moved between helping me scrub places that I normally called on my own magic to reach, and watching Calamity as he tinkered with broken radios he found in the other apartments, rebuilding one with parts cannibalized from the others. Steelhoof stood guard near the door. The radio Calamity had been rebuilding flared to life.
"Yee-haw! Welcome, ponies of Philadelphia. This is DJ Pony, beaming a light into even the darkest parts of the Equestrian Wasteland. You can't stop the signal, baby. And thanks to that kid from Stable 2, the message is reaching even the souls trapped in that celestial forsaken hellhole. Looks like our plucky stable dweller galloped into the heart of Red Eye's slaver operation and gave that old bastard a big black eye. In the form of losing nearly half his dirigibles and a small army's worth of slavers. Not to mention annihilating the crater boss. And she even took Red Eye's right hoof griffin stern down a peg. And that's not all. Our little wasteland heroine, our bringer of light, bucked right through the wall that Red Eye had built around Philadelphia's airwaves, bringing my humble message into the one place I could never reach before. Thank you, stable dweller."
I sunk deeper into the bath and moaned. The elation I felt at hearing Homage's voice, disguised as it was, in this horrible place, battled the humiliation and dismay of hearing my royal fuck-up described as a brilliant victory. I did not earn this.
"If any of you should happen to see our Lightbringer, give her a big thanks. She'll be easy to recognize. She keep in the company of the zebra slave she rescued as icing on the cupcake for her latest escapade. And for the rest of you still toiling away in Philadelphia, our hearts go out to you, and your plight has not been forgotten. Plus, I offer these small words of hope. Knowing our Lightbringer, I don't think she's done with Red Eye yet."
Zenith stared at the little radio, blinking slowly.
"How does he know so much?"
We had walked across the moat and outside the wall less than 3 hours ago. The zebra looked at my companions.
"And why does he not give you the credit you deserve? Much of the victory was yours, as was our escape, for which I am most thankful."
Calamity chuckled.
"Oh, shucks. 'Twarn't nothing."
Velvet Remedy purred.
"Because we asked DJ Pony not mention us, Little Pip here should get all of the credit."
I groaned. It was a conspiracy. I started to get up and say something, but Velvet Remedy put a hoof to my muzzle, then whispered into my ear,
"Oh, and don't think I've forgotten about that barn door comment."
She smiled as I collapsed with a splash under the weight of my embarrassment. DJ's pony's voice continued bringing news and advice to the ponies of the Equestrian Wasteland. I felt a chill as DJ Pony talked openly with us, having no idea she was in mortal danger.
Warning to all those traveling Central Equestria, keep your hooves away from the area surrounding Ponyville. I'm getting reports of fires along the back end of the Everfree Forest. They seem to be spreading slowly, but the advancing flames and smoke are pushing many of the forest's unpleasant inhabitants towards the Ponyville side of the Nightmare Zone, and at least a couple of monsters have actually wandered their way into the old town itself. Fortunately, the only ponies living in that area are raiders. So to the monsters I say, bon appetit.
Well, if it ain't one thing, it's another, Calamity neighed, pointing out that Splendid Valley was beyond Ponyville in the opposite direction. Fortunately, we would be crossing the area well above ground level, so we should be able to fly clear of any trouble.
Unless, of course, the critters wandering out of that place include manticores or the like.
Knowing my luck and the Equestrian Wasteland's maliciousness, they would be angry dragons.
Well, it's another hard day in this Equestrian Wasteland, but I've got the news and the music to get you through. So say bye-bye to stupid static, and hello to magnificent music. This has been your host, DJ Pony.
The voice of Homage's broadcast persona gave away to one of the newer songs on DJ Pony's playlist. Something from a record I had rescued out of Stable 29. I felt immensely better after the bath. As Velvet Remedy wove her horn around my broken body, mending my rib and lung with her beautiful magic, I began to drift to sleep. Steelhooves walked in.
Little Pip, can we talk about the zebra?
I released a long, suffering sigh. This again? Lamely pretending to mishear, I replied. Candyhawk? Sorry, don't think I've heard of her.
Funny, Steelhoof said dryly. Little Pip, I need to talk with you.
You need to go to the zoo? Fine. Need the four of us to come with you? I put a little emphasis on the number 4, only to realize that with Pyrelight it should have been 5. Where was that magnificent bird, anyway? Snickering softly, Velvet Remedy stood up and trotted over to the Steel Ranger, head down. She pressed against him, wrapping him with a telekinetic field of her own, reducing the massive weight of his armor so she could shove him out the door.
Sorry, Steelhooves, too busy saving Equestria today. All prejudice has been rescheduled. Is next month good for you?
Steelhooves nickered with a stomp.
You might accept having one of those traveling with you, but even if I did, there is no way the Steel Rangers would let her trot into the Citadel and live.
He looked at me over Velvet's scarlet and gold-streaked white mane.
Or am I wrong that you have further business there?
I buried my face as I realized the ghoul stallion had a point. Stabletech's old headquarters was my first intended stop. I had some things to discuss with Elder Blueberry Saber, but that wasn't some place I could take Zenith. I'd have more luck walking into the Steel Ranger's Citadel with an alicorn in tow and trying to convince them she was friendly. Velvet Remedy had him all the way through the door when I finally said, Steelhooves, I've welcomed Zenith to join us. She's here as long as she wants to be. If that's a problem for you, then you're free to be elsewhere. I stared at him with what I hoped was a gentle expression. Remember, Applejack herself offered her hooves in friendship to a zebra. The response I got back was an unexpected growl.
Yes, and if you only knew how that ended, you wouldn't speak of it.
Wow, minefield. Okay, but somehow I've become the leader of this merry band of ponies, and I've decided to give her a chance. If you want to stay with us, you will too. I won't have Zenith mysteriously disappearing when my back is turned. Velvet Remedy gasped sharply at my insinuation. She didn't know the patterns of behavior I had seen in Applesnack's memories and looked appalled that I could even suggest one of us was capable of such things. I envied her innocence. Steelhoof himself was silenced.
So, as long as you're with us, you will love and tolerate the shit out of her. Consider that an order.
I stared at him, giving him one chance.
That said, I added reluctantly, you are absolutely right about the Steel Rangers. I won't be bringing her with us into the Stabletech building, which, means we'll have to split up again. If only briefly, anyhow.
Steelhoof stood there for a moment, then gave a rigid nod. As he turned to trot away, he nearly ran into Zenith,
who was trotting up with a small covered cookpot hanging from her mouth. They stared at each other awkwardly, then danced about each other. Velvet Remedy backed up, letting Zenith through the doorway, then closed it behind her. Zenith lowered her neck, placing the pot on the floor. Once again, it would seem that I am subject of an argument.
You were the subject of an argument.
Is that not what I said? The zebra asked, perplexed. I covered a snicker with a hoof. Velvet Remedy gave up and rolled her eyes.
And what is that?
She asked, pointing at the cook pot with a hoof. Her ears tilted back.
Please tell me there is no meat in that.
Zenith looked quite surprised. Of course not. Zebras are vegetarians. As I thought were ponies. Are you not? I could see relief wash over Velvet Remedy as a look of joy broke over her face.
Yes. Yes, we are. Thanks, Celestia. Finally.
She slid up to Zenith, wrapping a foreleg around her neck, seemingly oblivious to the way Zenith suddenly tensed.
Oh, we are going to be best friends, you and I.
Velvet Remedy backed up, looking over Zenith.
And Little Pip isn't the only one in need of medical attention.
The mother doctor side of Velvet was instantly back in control as she pulled the top mattress off a set of bunk beds and insistently guided Zenith onto it. But the nudge to lie down was the final straw. Zenith jumped away, spinning and knocking back Velvet Remedy's nudging hoof with enough force to send Velvet stumbling back with a tear in her eye.
I do not like to be touched, the zebra spat.
Velvet Remedy blinked, falling onto her haunches, holding her bruised hoof against her breast. I felt like I was frozen. Part of me needed to jump between them, to do something. But the situation had changed so rapidly my brain was still catching up.
Oh.
Velvet Remedy blinked. Her eyes widened.
Oh!
She stared back at the tense zebra mare with an expression flooding with compassion.
Oh, Zenith, I'm so sorry.
I had not told any pony what Number 4 had told me about Zenith's abuse. I did not feel I had the right. Velvet Remedy didn't need to. She'd figured it out herself. Not the details, thank the goddesses, but enough. Gingerly putting her sore hoof down and standing, Velvet Remedy apologized again. But with that apology came insistence.
I will not touch you casually without permission. That was wrong of me. But I am a medical pony, and I will need to touch you to treat your physical wounds.
I can do that well enough on my own, Zenith nickered. Velvet nodded.
I'm sure you can, but I can do it better.
That was no boast. And, after Velvet Remedy had been able to treat my rib and lung, there was no question she was right.
You deserve a lot better treatment than what you've been getting. From others in the extreme, but also from yourself. Let me give you the level of care you need,
Velvet whinnied.
At least to the best of my ability.
Zenith neighed. I came here to deliver a gift for the little one, not to be prodded and treated by a medical pony. They both turned to look at me. I was half tempted to pretend I couldn't hear them again. Ugh. Our family had clearly grown big enough that some pony needed to lay ground rules. But why should that fall to me? Considering my whole lack of family experience, wasn't I the least qualified? Zenith, I said gently. In this group, we have to trust each other with our lives every day. We care for each other, and each one of us uses our talents to help all of us. I stopped as I recognized my line of thought was wandering. Readjusted.
You are very welcome here, and I do hope you stay with us. But being a part of this group will call for some sacrifices. You told me that I was responsible for you now. That includes making sure you're properly cared for, and this is how I choose to do that, by having Velvet Remedy care for you like she cares for the rest of us.
I looked at the zebra, adding, unless you choose to release me from my responsibilities. Zenith's eyes narrowed, but slowly she laid down the mattress. No, I do not, little pony. I let out a breath I hadn't realized I'd been holding. Velvet Remedy moved carefully towards the zebra. She stopped as she passed the small cookpot still resting on the floor. She sniffed at it.
Zenith, what is this gift?
It is a restorative brew, Zenith told us. It will replenish and heal your horn of the magics you overtaxed in our rescue. I blinked. On one hoof, this was extremely welcome news. The last time I had burned out, it had taken days to recover. With Red Eye's threat hanging over homage, I couldn't afford to be ineffective that long. On the other hoof, I couldn't help but question what a zebra could know of unicorn magics, much less remedies for uniquely unicorn ailments.
I know many of the ancient mystical recipes, ones to cure, to enhance, and to harm, Zenith told us. If I have the right ingredients, I can brew potions that will permanently alter and strengthen you, making you better fit for the fight ahead.
Alter? I didn't think I wanted to be altered.
This is no such potion, but I have what is necessary to craft one of these elixirs. One which will strengthen your bones, such that they will be much harder to break. I will brew this for you, if you allow me to.
Velvet Remedy looked skeptical.
I'm not sure that's such a good idea. Nor this gift, for that matter.
Before either of us could protest, Velvet reminded me.
Little Pip had some bad experiences with zebra medicine before. She is particularly susceptible to their dangers.
Zenith looked between us.
I would not offer addictive draught, nor give a cup too full.
The zebra frowned at Velvet, then turned to me.
You just said that here you allow each other to share their talents. Will you not let me share this one with you?
Velvet nickered at the way Zenith used my own argument so swiftly. The zebra cocked her head.
You have seen Red Eye, have you not? That pony has augmented himself with machines and technology. If the little one truly chooses for him to be her mortal enemy, then should she not take advantage of the gifts I offer her? If Red Eye is also my enemy, should I not offer them?
My answer was to get up, walk to the cookpot, and lift away the lid. The brew inside smelled sweetly spicy. The steam that rushed out cleared my sinuses. With only the slightest hesitation, I began to drink. My magic had been completely spent. After drinking Zenith's potion, and a night of rest, I still couldn't lift the now empty cookpot. But I believed I could feel the stirrings of my magic, and I knew one test which would call for only the tiniest spark of focus and power. I laid one of the memory orbs on the apartment floor. I had sacrificed all, save for the two I had taken from the safes in my battle with the Super Alicorn. But those two had been put in my other saddlebag. I laid down, leaning forward and concentrating as I touched my horn to the orb. Flashes of light burst across the night, scores of cameras capturing the moment for a mob of news ponies and paparazzi. They mixed with a throng of ponies shouting protests and holding signs in their mouths. My host was standing on a set of marbled steps, looking down on them and watching a quartet of armored police ponies push their way through. I was encased in armor, but unlike my experience in the mind of Applesnack, this armor did not feel heavy or claustrophobic. I could, in fact, barely feel it at all. The limited vision, the eyes forward sparkle that played behind the visor, and the smell of trapped pony sweat were the swiftest indications of how I was clad. A very nice scent of mare sweat, I could not help myself from thinking. With an unpleasant shock, I realized I could feel my wings. I was in a Pegasus pony. To each side of me stood more Pegasi wearing the sleek, black carapace armor I had come to associate with the Enclave. As the police ponies broke through the front of the crowd below and started up the steps, I could see they were escorting a zebra, bound in chains and encircled by the armored ponies. One of them stepped forward, speaking to some pony just behind me.
We caught her in the Ironshod Firearms, red-hoofed, trying to steal the schematics for the anti-machine rifle.
The zebra protested her mistreatment.
I have not broken any rule. I was invited there, you fool.
Her accent was like Zenith's, and I recognized the odd rhyming that seemed to follow in all of her speech. Lowering her voice loudly, Zecora asked the lead pony,
So, are you always such a tool?
I knew it,
cried an equally familiar voice from behind me. The pink party pony advanced into view, glaring daggers at the zebra.
And to think I let you trick us into trusting you. You trickster.
Zecora looked hurt. Pinkie Pie didn't relent, breaking into furious sing-song.
She's an evil enchantress, and she does evil dances.
Pinkie Pie, you have me wrong. I am not like your fuller song.
Don't even try to entrance me, Zecora. I never again.
Pinkie Pie turned from her, scowling. It was the first time I had seen the mayor of the Ministry of Morale angry, and it was terrifying. In a low voice, she grumbled,
"I hope you really like rocks."
Pinkie Pie looked up at me, then jabbed a hoof towards two of the armored Pegasi on my right.
"You and you, help escort my old friend," Pinkie Pie hissed the words between clenched teeth, "to the convoy. Sakura will be spending the rest of her life as a guest in Shatterhoof. Tell them that I want all of that zebra's memories. And don't be too gentle."
The two Pegasi on my right rushed to obey. Pinkie Pie pointed her hoof at me.
"You, with me."
The pink earth pony stomped back up the steps and into what I assumed was a ministry building. My host turned and trotted after her, following behind Pinkie Pie as she crossed the darkened, spacious lobby towards the elevators. Under her breath, Pinkie Pie continued to sing venomously.
"She'll mix up an evil brew and swallow you up in a big, tasty stew."
She stopped singing in the elevator, which was good since the song would have clashed unpleasantly with the lullaby version of March of the Parasprites that was playing inside the lift. Pinkie Pie turned and pushed all the buttons simultaneously with her rump. The elevator took us directly to a large office with a huge plate glass window that looked out over Canterlot. Pinkie Pie strode dangerously in the middle of the room, then turned, fixing me with a sort of malevolent expression that made me think she might carve me up and bake me into a cupcake. Then, in a magical instant, she broke into a huge smile that seemed to light up the room. She waved a hoof in a sweeping bow, her voice bursting with joy.
"Acting!"
The aging pink earth pony collapsed on the floor in a fit of giggles.
"Best prank ever!"
My host humped and trotted over to the window, looking down below. The eyes forward sparkle started identifying ponies and wagons in the street below. The convoy carrying Zakora to Shatterhoof was already rolling out under a light guard supplemented by the two Pegasi in magically powered armor. I felt myself lift the visor. In the window, my reflected face was blue, with magenta eyes and a shock of rainbow-colored hair matted between them. Pinkie Pie's reflection appeared on the window next to me.
"Zakora's gonna be all right," she asked,
a note of true concern in her voice.
"Won't she, Dashie?"
I saw and felt my host nod.
"She's been with the best trainers the Ministry of Awesome has. I wouldn't let this move forward if it were otherwise."
Pinkie Pie nodded and turned her stare to the convoy below. It was already two blocks away. Pinkie Pie paused, lifting her left forehoof and wiggling it.
"Huh."
Rainbow Dash ignored this, eyes narrowing.
"Extraction by traitorous zebra sympathizers in 3, 2.
Pinkie Pie looked down, excited.
"Oh, Zakora's gonna make such a good spy."
1. There was a flash down below as the first wagon in the prisoner convoy exploded. Dark figures rushed in from all sides amidst flashes of muzzle fire. Rainbow Dash pushed down her visor.
"And here we go."
I sat in the apartment common room, trying to float small objects. I had made it up to levitating a pack of bubblegum, which, honestly, was the only thing I imagined the package was good for anymore. Who would even try to eat 200-year-old bubblegum? Over breakfast, a meal which in content was indistinguishable from dinner, the conversation had turned towards more open introductions and an attempt by the others to get to know Zenith a little better in return for regaling her with stories of our adventures over the past 5 weeks. "I have never seen a bloodwing," Zenith admitted, "but I have seen the desiccated husks their preying leaves behind. Still, wouldn't a missile be a little excessive for killing one?"
"Steelers ain't never been one for underkill."
The ghoul snorted.
"Huh, you should talk. Tell her about your solution to the alicorns chasing us through Manhattan."
"Actually," Velvet Remedy interrupted, "I think it's Zenith's turn to share."
She gave the zebra an encouraging look and suggested,
"Why don't you tell us a little bit about where you learned those brewing skills of yours?"
Velvet was purposefully suggesting tales of a time that must have been before Philadelphia, steering the zebra's memories and our conversation away from the more dangerous and hurtful paths. Zenith hesitated, but relented as the silence stretched out.
"I learned the brewing of potions and remedies, both mundane and magical, from my grandparents. In their youth, they had been adventurers of sorts,
prying into all sorts of forbidden places, even delving into Everfree Forest in search of the Hut of Zecora and the braving lookout plateau that rises above the dark fumes of Froggy Bottom Bog along the vilest stretch of the Ponytomic, searching out old recipes and lore of zebra kind that had been lost for over a century. It is from them that I learned the ways and tales of the zebra people, or as much as I know of them.
I looked up from my task of stacking bubblegum and bullets into a tiny fort. Somehow, the idea of the zebras as equestrian scavengers not unlike myself was surprising. I don't know what I expected. Something more militaristic and uniquely zebra, I guessed.
My great-grandparents were amongst the survivors of Stable 3, as were most zebras in the equestrian wasteland. As is typical for youth, my grandparents rebelled against their parents' ways and sought to learn more about the zebras beyond the tales passed down through oral tradition since the Sealing.
I didn't need clarification on what the Sealing was. No pony who lived in a stable would. But I did wish to know more about the stable whose floor plan I had in my pipbuck.
Stable 3?
Steelhoofs grunted.
The Let's Get Along stable,
he snorted derisively. I saw Velvet's ears perk at that.
It was clearly an experimental stable,
Steelhoofs rumbled.
Virtually all of the zebra citizens of Equestria were randomly assigned to Stable 3. They would have made up half the stable's population.
Zenith frowned at the unpleasantness of the interruption, but nodded at Steelhoof's assessment.
It was long before even my grandparents' time, but the stories passed down say the Overmares told all of the stable why they had been chosen, and why the stable had no texts of history or posters of current events.
Ah. Instead of altering things, Scootaloo and her friends had simply filtered out as much of the Ministry of Images' influence as possible.
Velvet Remedy questioned. Overmares? Plural?
Zenith nodded.
One pony and one zebra.
My experience with stables was clawing at the back of my mind. Still, if there were survivors...
What went wrong?
Why would you assume something went wrong? Zenith gave me a questioning look.
Zebras and ponies can live together quite harmoniously, if each gives the other the opportunity.
Steelhoofs again provided the answer I was looking for.
Stable 3 was built within the limits of the one city in Equestria with more than a hoof full of zebras,
he informed us.
Canterlot.
Oh, no. Zenith saw my expression and nodded glumly.
Not even the stables could hold back the pink cloud forever. Stable 3 lasted over a century before the cloud ate its way inside. Within a generation more, those who still could were focused on unsealing the door and fleeing. Many did not survive the exposure. My great-grandparents were among those who did.
You killed a dragon?
Zenith stared between Calamity and me, her eyes wide. They narrowed as she asked me,
Is this true? Or is this the revenge for Doom Bunny?
Doom Bunny?
Velvet asked curiously. Calamity pulled a book from his saddlebags.
I'm guessing something to do with this.
I focused, trying to wrap the book in my field of magic. I broke a sweat, but the book dutifully floated over to me in a cushion of levitating energy.
Martial Arts of the Zebra announced the title.
Where did you find this? I asked as I flipped the book open to the contents page.
Filing cabinet at the station, Calamity said matter-of-factly.
Strangely enough, it was under P. I shrugged that off. The prologue spoke of the zebra's rich history of martial artistry, from the many fighting styles that had been perfected over the centuries, such as Fallen Kaisar style, to the newer ones. The newest of these styles had only been in existence for a couple of years at the time this pre-apocalyptic book had been written, and focused on a drug-enhanced martial prowess, Doom Bunny style. The book's author spoke ill of it for having undefined influences from the lands of the ponies. I closed the book, intending to read it later.
Zenith tapped a hoof in thought. Little Pip, with your permission, there is some place I would like us to go. I understand there are other matters that are pressing, but this is important to me.
Of course we... Wait, how come this is my decision? I looked at the others.
Why do you ponies keep acting like I'm the leader?
Lil Pip's right, Calamity neighed. Anyway, we do have more pressing matters, so I think we should first hear that plan. What's next?
I nodded thankfully and laid out the plan.
We need to go to StableTech headquarters first. I have something that Elder Blueberry Saber wants, and I plan to use it to barter for access to the StableTech mainframe.
Steelhoofs whinnied questioningly.
Red Eye is building a fortress called the Cathedral where Stable 101 used to be. I figure the StableTech mainframe has record of the location of all the stables, so that's the fastest way to find out where Red Eye's main base is located.
I looked to Calamity.
After that, I said we fly as fast as we can to Tenpony Power and begin an evacuation.
Calamity smirked and turned to Zenith. I'm sorry for interrupting. Just proving a point. Now go on with what you were asking.
I blinked, lost.
Huh? What point?
Zenith gave her own smirk back, answering kindly.
I believe you just demonstrated to everyone but yourself why you are the leader.
I stared. What did she... Oh, fuck. I shot Calamity a dark look, but the buck just grinned.
Luna clapped me with her wings.
You could go yourself,
Steelhoof suggested to Zenith as non-nastily as he could.
Zenith nodded.
Yes, but the journey would be a long and dangerous one. I would prefer to arrive later than not at all.
She looked at me.
Although, should you refuse, then I will take my leave as soon as your travels bring us within a few days of my destination.
I nodded. I wanted to immediately agree, but it seemed wise to ask.
Where do you need to go?
I need to return to my tribal home, the village that had been mine and my family's until stern slavers descended upon it.
Your family?
My parents and husband were slain in the fight. My daughter...
The zebra choked before plowing on.
My daughter was too young for stern slave pits, and not a pony, so she had no place in Red Eye's schools. So Stern left her there, along with the other children.
Velvet Remedy whimpered, shedding the tears that the zebra seemed unable or unwilling to. My own thoughts traveled back to the words of one of the raiders in Shatterhoof, speaking about how her own town had been treated to the same, with the children left behind to fend for themselves. She'd fled into the life of a raider to escape the horror her town had descended into under the rule of slaughter-scarred bullies and traumatized children.
It was long ago. Years. I doubt my daughter would still know me should she still survive.
Zenith's face was sorrowful, but her voice was steady.
Any claim I had as her guide and guardian, I lost in the years since. I only wish to know.
You really shouldn't be going anywhere.
Velvet Remedy chided as we made our way towards the StableTech building, itself walled off from the rest of Philadelphia like Stern City in miniature.
Except to a medical clinic for a week or two of recovery.
She was probably right, but we couldn't afford a week. I felt guilty for having selfishly stolen most of a day for resting. But once my magic had grown strong enough to lift little Macintosh, I knew it was time to move. A small family of scavengers spotted us on the street and scurried for cover. It hurt to think that ponies once greeted each other as they passed on the street. That cheer and open neighborliness had once been the social norm. In the equestrian wasteland, a stranger pony was met with guarded suspicion, assessed first for threat potential. I gave the scavengers a smile and a friendly hoof wave as we passed. It wasn't returned as they cringed, the adults hiding the younger ponies behind them, weapons ready should we attack like a band of raiders. I hated the equestrian wasteland. Especially Philadelphia.
Oh my,
Velvet Remedy burst out, her eyes wide with wonder.
Aren't you just magnificent?
She trotted quickly ahead of us. Pyrolite was perched on the fountain statue of Sweetie Belle, glowing brilliantly. She had bled off most of the endowment from the Philadelphia crater, but her aura was still 5 times her size, lighting up the Steel Ranger's outer courtyard with a golden radiance. My heart went out to the Balefire Phoenix, immensely grateful for her companionship when I was behind the wall. I too began to trot towards her, a tear in my eye. My pit buck started clicking, informing me that being in Pyrolite's vicinity was even less healthy than bathing in Philadelphia water. I drew up short and watched as Velvet Remedy floated out a bottle of Radsay from a saddlebox. She downed more than the recommended dose before trotting right up to the radioactive bird and nuzzling her gently. Pyrolite cooed. Well, at least Velvet Remedy wasn't spending nearly as much time inside that Fluttershy orb since Firelight joined us.
I had mixed feelings about the trade.
All the ponies in this crowd are crazy, Zenith muttered as she walked past me.
I moved up to Zenith.
This building belongs to the Steel Rangers. I think maybe it's not safe for you to come with us. Would you mind waiting outside? It won't be alone, and I hope it won't be for too long.
Zenith considered me.
And whom did you intend to keep me company?
I knew I needed Calamity's combat prowess backing me up, just in case my meeting with Blueberry Saber went south. And not only did I want a Steel Ranger at my side for diplomatic reasons, I didn't trust him alone with Zenith quite yet. Velvet Remedy, on the other hoof, would enjoy having some time with Firelight, and I certainly wasn't going to take the glowing ball of regal radiation with me. I told Zenith my decision. The Zebra nodded.
As you wish. I will remain here with the Unicorn Fluttershy and her Balefire Doom Bunny.
Okie dokie Loki. Perhaps you could work on that brew you offered me, I suggested, taking a plunge.
I wanted to show the Zebra my trust, and give her something to do while we were gone that she would find productive. I didn't really want to be altered. I had a hard enough time entering the memories of folks whose bodies were significantly different than my own. I didn't know how well I could handle living in one. But Zenith was right. Red Eye had his own advantages. I had to at least seriously consider putting my squeamishness aside and taking those offered to me.
Zenith smiled.
As you wish.
Those fires I reported yesterday appear to be the work of Red Eye's private army. Griffins sporting the Slaver King's colors were spotted flying over the far side of the Everfree Forest carrying incinerators. But were any other woods we consumed in flame by now, these fires have been spreading extremely slowly. Looks to me like Everfree Forest is fighting back.
DJ Pony's voice came out the wall speakers in the Stable Tech Visitor's Lounge. We listened as I waited impatiently.
And one last bit of news for all you faithful listeners. Looks like Red Eye set his sights on Ten Pony Tower. Fortunately for the folks in that place, it's built like a fortress. And the only entrance is both well defended and tricky to access. The ponies of Ten Pony Tower are barricaded inside, safe and sound for now. There's plenty of stockpiled food and water, and the new constable chief is doing her best to organize rationing, so they should be able to hold out until help arrives.
I jumped to my hooves at that.
No! I shouted at the speaker. They're not trying to invade, they're trying to seal you in!
And now for something a bit unusual. I don't normally read mail on the air, but I have a personal message here from my assistant Homage to the stable dweller. Ahem. Dearest little Pip. Oh, now ain't that sweet. I think some pony has a crush. Dearest little Pip. I know things sound bad here, and I know it's your nature to try to rush to our rescue, but we're okay for now, and you have more pressing matters closer to home. Do what you need to do. Take care of them first. Then, later, we can meet where we met before, and I promise to give you so many Well, that's not something I'm comfortable reading on the air. I think maybe I'll have a little talk with my assistant. Meanwhile, hear the silky smooth tones of Velvet Remedy singing about what gets her through life in this post-apocalyptic wasteland.
I stared at the speaker, my body locked up, my jaw on the floor, and heat rushing to my face, not to mention other places. Velvet Remedy's voice poured through the speaker, replacing the voice of DJ Pony, but I barely heard it. What I meant to say was, I can't believe she just did that. What I actually said was closer to a squeak. Calamity snickered, tears in his eyes, then collapsed onto his back in laughter.
What do you mean the Elder isn't here?
The Elder's been called away on an urgent crusade and is not available, Night Poppy Seed claimed. However, she said that in the case you should return, I may receive what you have recovered. I stomped.
I wasn't under the impression that these things were important to you, ponies. Or at least to her, considering I risked my life for them and all.
She wasn't actually expecting you to survive,
Steelhoof deciphered. From his tone, he wanted a few words with the Elder himself. I glowered at the mare in the magically powered armor.
Fine. I can report that Red Eye's research into bypass spells has been destroyed.
I hadn't scavenged any of it, and would have not given it to these ponies even if I had. But I did know that at least part of the research had been successfully completed.
I could tell her that. But really, fuck these ponies. I have recovered the schematics to the radiation-powered engine, and I'm ready to turn them over to you, after having made copies, but I didn't feel the need to tell her that. I had no problem giving the Steel Rangers this technology. I intended to give it out to any pony with a chance of implementing it. This was the sort of step forward that all Equestria could potentially benefit from, but not if it was being jealously guarded by only a few. That said, I'd be damned if I wasn't going to start getting something returned this time. In exchange for access to the StableTech mainframe. Night Poppyseed sputtered at that. I'm sorry, there's... No, there is no way. Calamity stepped up next to me, fixing her with a dangerous stare. I reckon we ain't exactly asking. Y'all owe Little Pip, and we're taking payment. Now, why don't we do it all friendly-like? The Nightmare looked to Steelhoofs for support.
I'm a star paladin, my armor-encased companion reminded her smoothly. In the absence of the Elder, I am the ranking ranger on this base. And I order you to take us to the StableTech mainframe.
He turned his stare to me.
I will personally make sure Little Pip doesn't access any information vital to the security of the Steel Rangers or the Ministry of Wartime Technology.
Night Poppyseed nickered, but turned obediently and began to lead. Permission to speak freely, sir?
No.
The room was cold and dark, save for the blinking lights of the mainframe. From the locks on the door, the turrets outside, and the hoofprints in the dust, I could tell this room was not only restricted, but rarely entered. I hoofed the light switch, but the room remained dark. I turned on my pitbuck lamp and looked around. The spotlight on Steelhoof's helmet hummed softly to life, cutting a beam of light through the darkness. He followed me in. Instead of moving directly for the mainframe, I allowed my curiosity to drag me around the huge basement room. At the far end was a huge, gear-shaped door of the stable. It rested against an open doorway, not attached. By removing my saddlebags, I was barely able to shimmy through the entrance. According to the number, this was Stable Zero. Beyond stretched the rooms and hallways of a stable maintenance wing, but the hallways dead-ended in shallow caverns of dirt. The rooms were unfinished. Toolboxes and construction equipment lay scattered everywhere. Several directions of the walls and ceilings had collapsed. In one corner, I found the curled-up skeleton of an earth pony. The floor around the pony was littered with empty bottles. I shook my head and noticed the liquor had been Applejack. There was a black opal laying on the floor next to the tattered remains of Recollector. The lower bone of the earth pony's left foreleg wore an early model pitbuck. I plugged my pitbuck onto it and found a single audio recording. Sitting down, I let it begin to play. The voice on the recording was soft, almost overwhelmed by the background noises of sirens and bombardment. I don't really know what to say, or for that matter whom I'm saying it to. Good news is that Sweetabelle's got my family safe and sound and stable too. I don't know where Sudalu's at, but I'm glad she's not. A particularly loud roar drowned out everything else, followed by the sounds of metal and concrete collapsing within the unfinished stable as a maelstrom devoured the city above. Philadelphia was just hit. That's it, then. It's all over. Every pony's dead, except for the ones we could save. Celestia, damn it, Applejack, couldn't you stop this from happening? Couldn't any pony have stopped this? I heard a furious clicking. I checked my pitbuck, but the radiation meter was safely in the green. No. I didn't mean that. It ain't Applejack's fault. Hey, it's more my fault than theirs. And I know it ain't supposed to feel that way, but I do sometimes. And I guess it don't really matter anymore. Every pony's dead now. I'm dead now. I didn't survive the mega spell just because I lived through the blast. We never got the door on. Radiation will kill me. The clicking was coming from the recording. I just want to tell any pony that's listening that I'm sorry. Even if it's not my fault that all those kids are dead, I'm still sorry. I tried to make up for it. I really did. Steelhoofs was calling for me. I'm fine, I called back, wiping tears from my eyes. I'll be out in just a minute. Before worming my way back out, I knelt down and picked up the memory orb in my teeth.
Once back in the basement proper, I put the orb in my saddlebags and proceeded to the StableTech mainframe. The mainframe was a tricky hack, but either I had grown more skilled, or Pinkie Pie's had been easier. I downloaded all the information I could on various stables and began sifting through it for the one piece of information that interested me the most, the location of Stable 101. I found it, and the answer surprised me. Once I was reunited with all my friends outside the Steel Ranger Citadel, having given Night Poppyseed the schematics I had promised in return, I told everyone what I had learned. Stable 101 was built within the Everfree Forest itself. The looks and gasps were exactly what I expected. Apparently there used to be an old castle on a safe patch of land in the middle of the place. That's where StableTech built their last completed stable. Zenith was the first to make a particular connection. So Red Eye is building his fortress in the middle of the Everfree Forests, and is burning down the forest around it. Why? Awful hard to maintain a growing army in a space where the wildlife wants to disembowel and suck their juices, I imagine, Calamity theorized. Agriculture, I answered with my own guess. You said it yourself, Calamity. The Everfree Forest was never hit by a megaspell. As far as cropland goes, the Everfree Forest is one of the few places that isn't poisoned with radiation or taint. Zenith agreed with my line of thought. And after the burning, the soil would be rich with nutrients from the ashes. She looked grim, slipping unconsciously into a sort of rhyming speech that I was used to hearing from Zecora. I worked for months recycling flame fuel for Stern. Clearly, he was stockpiling plenty for this burn.
And when he's done, he'll put up a wall around the whole place and have complete control over the food.
Steelhoofs agreed, glancing backwards towards the wall that Red Eye had erected around 2/3 of the city.
It's what he does.
Do you think she'll like it? Applebloom asked, fretting over an exquisite model of an almost monastic walled village. The design looked familiar. I had seen the remains of this model on display outside of Elder Blueberry Saber's chambers.
She'll love it,
I felt and heard myself say. The voice was not immediately familiar, and completely lacked the country drawl of the younger mare. This Applebloom, dressed in the manner of formal attire that she had not yet grown comfortable with, was no older than me. Do you think she'll like the crenulations?
She'll love the crenulations,
my host assured her gently.
The crenulations are fine.
How about the moon in the center courtyard? Maybe I should have gone with the full moon rather than the crescent moon.
She'll love the moon. The moon is fine.
Applebloom trotted nervously around the table, eyeing the model from every angle. The room we stood in was a glowing white marble with flowing curtains and golden filigree in all the accents. If it weren't in a palace, then some pony had gone to great lengths to give the impression of one. How about the tower? Is it too short? Or maybe it's too tall? Applebloom hoofed her ears in frustration. Ugh, I don't even know Princess Luna likes towers. Why didn't I ask that earlier? My host let out a long-suffering whinny.
She'll love the towers. The towers are very nice.
Applebloom reacted like she'd been struck. Nice? But they need to be perfect. Applebloom's agitation was strong enough that she nearly hovered. I thought the young mare could spontaneously combust from the stress.
Calm down, child. I'm sure Princess Luna will love all of it.
I felt myself smile as soothing words came from my muzzle.
Princess Celestia wanted the greatest architect in all of Equestria for this project, and she made sure she got it.
Applebloom quaked a moment, then calmed with a breath.
Thank you, Uncle Orange, for accompanying me to meet the princess. I don't think I could have done this on my own.
You're doing a far sight better than your sister ever managed, but try to watch the country drawl. Remember, sound sophisticated, and you show every pony that you are sophisticated.
Yes, Uncle Orange, I'll remember.
Applebloom returned to fretting, but a more subdued fretting.
You should be proud, Uncle Orange said encouragingly. This is the sort of project that will make you renowned across all of Equestria.
Applebloom simply nodded. The fame didn't seem to interest her. However,
with the bits I get from this, I'll be able to expand my business, hire more help, maybe start looking into other sorts of designs.
She looked up with a smile.
Skulu says she'd like to invest now that Red Racer is doing so well. Maybe build a company together.
Applebloom's voice fell away. Another presence entered the room. An exalted one. My host dropped gracefully into a bow. Applebloom swiftly followed his example. I was in the company of a goddess. Not one of those blasphemous pseudo-goddess Alicorn monsters. I found myself kneeling before the goddess of the sun whom I prayed to since I was a little filly. Celestia herself. She was majestic beyond description. A tall, white, proper Alicorn, whose mane and tail flowed with color, her flank emblazoned with the symbol of the sun itself. She was graceful, kind, and altogether sovereign. Please, she addressed us graciously. Rise, my little ponies. It is a joy to see you. As my host stood, Princess Celestia, squee, 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 moved around the table, eyeing the model favorably. So, this is to be Luna's new academy? Applebloom nodded nervously, unable to speak. It looks lovely. Applebloom squeaked. Thank you, Your Majesty. Celestia's ears perked. Oh, here she comes. If you would be so kind as to let me speak first.
Of course, Your Majesty, my host said quickly.
Celestia turned, and both Applebloom and her uncle followed the glorious princess's gaze. Princess Luna walked in between two curtains. Her dark blue colors looked striking, yet starkly out of place in the rest of the palace. She was much smaller than her regal older sister, or for that matter, than the pseudo-goddesses. Almost the size of a normal pony, in fact. While Princess Celestia was resplendent, Princess Luna struck me as cute. The sort of cute that I would have impure thoughts about if the pony in my head wasn't already too busy bouncing around Pinkie Pie style and letting off a barrage of squeeing noises.
Sister, you called for me.
Yes, Luna, dear. I've been thinking about that school of magic you've been proposing, and I've decided to send all of your students to the moon. Luna froze, her mouth hung open, then slowly closed. You wouldn't. I could see the gears in her head start spinning. And you couldn't. Without the elements of harmony, you don't have anywhere near that kind of power, dear sister. What was going on here? Applebloom, apparently either not quite in on the joke, or simply unable to bear seeing Luna made uncomfortable, quickly spoke up. She means the Crescent Moon Canyon. Princess Celestia smiled, but tilted her head towards Applebloom with a look that suggested the regal princess hadn't wanted the young architect to spill that quite yet. Princess Luna shot her sister a look, then moved on to the table, her eyes going wide. This? She looked up with tears in her eyes. This is going to be the Luna Academy for Young Unicorns? A magical school of my very own? Just like yours? Princess Celestia smiled and nuzzled her younger sister. Happy birthday, little sister. Applebloom's mouth hung open until my host tapped his own with his hoof.
Blushing, she waved a hoof over the model.
Princess Celestia is given... She paused, looking up at the princess to make sure it was okay to speak. Princess Celestia smiled with a nod and softness in her eyes. Us Little Horn Valley in the Crescent Moon Canyon to build on. It's isolated, far away from any dangers.
Or any villages, Princess Luna noted, giving her sister a gentler look, but a look nonetheless.
And far away from Canterlot and your own school.
Princess Celestia nodded.
I wanted you to have this fairly, without ponies making the comparisons they would if the schools were side by side, and without the students being distracted by rivalry.
The princess flicked her gaze to Applebloom as she nodded.
And I know you were considering Ponyville, but I didn't want young colts and fillies wandering off into the Everfree Forest.
Luna rolled her eyes.
Come on, big sister. No filly is foolish enough to go wandering around that place. Have faith in my students.
Applebloom was making the sort of face that suggested she really wanted to be someplace else.
The only thing within a day's ride of Littlehorn are some zebra jungles.
Yes, Princess Celestia nodded. There will be friendly zebras not far away if they need assistance, and soon several of your students will have baby dragons of their own. So if any pony needs to contact you, you'll only be a sneeze away.
We were airborne between Philadelphia and Manhattan. As much as I wanted to go straight to Ten Pony Tower, the warning that DJ Pony had sent me was at the front of my thoughts, so I had directed Calamity to take us to Junction R7 first. If something nasty was brewing in Shatterhoof, something that Amish thought I needed to take care of first, then I wasn't going to waste any time. That still left me a lot of time to think. And most of that time was spent thinking about the memory orb I had found beside poor Applebloom's skeleton. My inner pony had taken over a day to stop dancing at having seen the goddesses, and it was almost harder to prevent myself from reliving the memory over and over than it was to fight the urge for party time mintals. And at least with the latter, I had the help of simply not carrying any to take. The cravings came without an easy way to sate them, but this. I couldn't throw away a memory orb of the goddesses. It deserved to be enshrined. I momentarily played with the idea of taking the cathedral for myself, wanting to transform it into a temple to Celestian Luna with the memory orb as a sacred relic. It was a silly daydream, and it passed. I also caught myself revisiting the notion of Luna clapping me with her wings, only this time as a fantasy rather than a swear. I caught myself before my imagination could get too far, and punished myself by banging my head repeatedly against the side of the Sky Bandit until Calamity threatened to land. It took a while before the other implications of what I had seen started to sink in. Littlehorn. It was a name I'd heard before in several contexts, but Watcher's words stood out. The massacre at Littlehorn broke Princess Celestia's heart. After that, nearly midway through the war, Princess Celestia decided she wasn't the right pony to lead Equestria anymore. So she stepped down, abdicated her position to her sister, Princess Luna. I looked around. Velvet Remedy was lost inside the Fluttershy memory orb once more. Pyrelight, her aura merely twice her size, had cradled herself against Velvet's left shoulder and was snoring loftily. I shared the Sky Bandit with Steelhooves and Zenith. Calamity was ahead, pulling us. Well, if there was any pony who would know, it was Steelhooves. What happened at Littlehorn? Steelhooves and Zenith both started at the question. They looked at each other before Steelhooves answered me simply.
Disaster.
I shivered, knowing I didn't really want to hear this, but part of me needed to. Tell me.
Littlehorn was a school. Unicorns, fillies, and colts, many of whom were too young to even have their cutie marks, lived there, being trained by some of the best of Equestria's magicians.
Steelhooves started slowly.
One evening, around twilight, a little over 9 years into the war, a zebra convoy rolled into Littlehorn Valley. 2 dozen zebra legionnaires and 3 large covered wagons. When they didn't respond to peaceful overtures, the matron of the school activated the school's defenses.
They didn't know your language, Zenith abruptly interrupted. They weren't frontline soldiers. It was a refugee convoy. Mares and small zebra children just trying to get out of the killing zone.
I know that,
Steelhooves shot back harshly.
They realized that when the first wagon was struck and they saw the dead. But by then it was too late.
He turned to me.
It was too late. The zebra convoy had assassins wearing zebra stealth cloaks.
They had one, Zenith corrected. A father whose family was killed in your school's surprise attack.
They only needed one,
Steelhooves growled.
The school was full of children, and the zebras set off a gas bomb inside. It was Canterlot in miniature. The striped bastards killed every pony in Littlehorn.
I felt myself crying. Okay, please, I don't want to hear any more. They weren't paying attention to me. But then I wasn't being very assertive. I was still numb with heartache. Littlehorn had been the turning point of the war, and the pony in my mind was realizing with tearful slowness how Littlehorn had rippled out to destroy every pony it touched. I began to understand. The architect Applebloom's sense of guilt and how it steered her choices. And that would have been nothing compared to the guilt and sorrow of then-Princess Celestia, who had herself chosen the location. Or the effects on Princess Luna, whose beloved students were the ones slaughtered to the last.
It was after Littlehorn that the damn zebras went totally manticore shit. Every fight became one to annihilation of one side or the other.
We struck one wagon, and yes, it was a mistake. They massacred hundreds of small children, and then went completely insane over it.
That had nothing to do with Littlehorn, Xanath said solemnly. The war had changed. It wasn't about coal or gemstones anymore.
Coal or gemstones? But then that made a lot of sense. Zebras weren't like unicorns. They couldn't cast spells or use magic directly. They had to brew it into potions, infuse it into fetishes, or otherwise bind it into objects to get their magic to work. And with the possible exception of soul jars, gemstones were the ultimate receptacle for magical enchantment. Any society advancing through arcane sciences would require trains full of gemstones. That was easy for ponies. We had lands rich with them, rock farms for growing them. But if the zebra lands didn't have gems... But they did have coal. I was pulled out of my mental distraction when Steel was advanced on Xanath.
Then admit your whole damn species had a fucking mental break.
Not mine, Xanath insisted. We saw that you ponies had fallen under the influence of the stars. No quarter could be given and no mercy expected from a nation under the sway of cosmic evil. What? I mouthed what Steelhoof screamed.
Did you or did you not choose to follow the champion of the evil stars, Nightmare Moon?
What? Are you... What?
Steelhoof turned, stomping and pacing until Calamity once again threatened to land the Sky Bandit and give us all a talking to.
Wait, I said slowly. Are you saying that the reason the war got so bad is because zebras couldn't tell the difference between Princess Luna and Nightmare Moon?
From a struggle of resources to holy war in 10 seconds flat.
They are not the same fucking pony,
Steelhoof screamed at Xanath. Although more now because he couldn't scream at the zebras of the past.
We weren't following Nightmare Moon any more than Princess Celestia imprisoned Luna on the fucking moon for 1,000 years.
The Steel Ranger was shaking.
They are not the same.
Velvet Remedy had come out of the Fluttershy orb and was looking on in confusion. Steelhooves turned to the two of us and barked.
Tell her.
They are not the same, I said firmly, then took note of the silence beside me. I turned to look towards Velvet Remedy.
Honestly, she whispered, I was never really clear on that myself. I always figured it was some kind of psychotic break.
Steelhoof sounded murderous, which, considering this was Steelhoof's, actually scared me.
Psychotic breaks don't come with physical transformations.
I nodded in firm agreement. Unless you were Pinkie Pie's hair, I thought, remembering that weird change at the end of her argument with Twilight Sparkle. Steelhoof visibly shook. His voice changed from an angered yell to a low, even blade.
Then there was never any real chance of diplomacy after that, was there?
I could tell that behind his visor, his eyes were locked on Xanath's.
The invitation to Shattered Hoof Ridge for peace talks. There was never going to be any peace talks, were there?
Xanath's ears flattened. She tried to be reasonable, apparently realizing that this was no longer even an unfriendly argument.
I was not there. Please remember that these were other people, zebras and ponies alike, not us.
Answer the question.
Xanath looked away.
From the tales I was told, she sighed sadly. Peace was what was hoped, but there could only be peace if Nightmare Moon was removed. Unfortunately, the ponies sent the wrong princess to Shattered Hoof Ridge.
The night turned infinitely colder. I waited, my nerves on edge, for what Steelhoof would do. With a final growl, Steelhoof removed himself to the farthest end of the Sky Bandit and crouched down, pretending to sleep. Which I knew he didn't, but I thankfully played along.
Y'all okay back there? Calamity called back.
My answer echoed Steelhoof's answer to Night Poppy Seed.
No.
We picked up the signal near within an hour of setting down at Junction R7. It wasn't from Shattertuff. Automated distress call from Stable Tech Stable 2. Message begins. The mechanized voice gave way to one I had written off ever hearing again. The voice of our Overmare.
Little Pip, Velvet Remedy, if either of you can hear this, I pray you're still alive, still out there to hear this. Please, if you, or if any friendly pony can hear this, Stable 2 is under attack. We don't know who they are or where they came from, but they have somehow opened the front door and they are killing every pony inside. I've evacuated all the survivors into the security and Overmare's wing. But now that we are cut off from the orchard, we are running out of food. These invaders seem content to wait us out. If you can hear this, please save us.
My blood turned to ice. I analyzed the signal. The broadcast was being piped through the same transmitter that the father of a dying colt had once tapped into from the cistern under the big Macintosh Memorial. The mechanical voice returned. Home. Message repeats. This is an automated distress call from Stable Tech Stable 2. Message begins.
Oh, goddesses. Clemony, turn now. We have to get to Stable 2. Fast.
Little Pip, I'm about to collapse here. What's the... I pulled out my ear bloom and played the message aloud. Within 10 words, Clemony was already banking and pulling us onto our new heading.
No,
Steeles whispered.
Damn them, no!
I swiveled towards my Steel Ranger friend.
No what?
And then I realized what crusade Elder Blueberry Saber had rushed off to the moment I was out of the way.
I'm sorry, Little Pip. I did everything I could to make them believe taking Stable 2 was a mistake. I have been for decades. But after you two showed up, and they realized there was still a functional stable down there.
This was your mission?
I strode forward, my glare alone almost strong enough to disintegrate the Earth Pony Ghoul.
Assess if Stable 2 could be safely taken?
He cringed back from me.
I even tried giving them Stable 29 instead.
I rocked on my hooves, my mind teetering on the edge of a dark chasm as I struggled to remember if, in my own hack of Stable 29's entrance, I might have left clues that the tech-savvy agents of the Ministry of Wartime Technology could have used to figure their way through my own stable's door.
Velvet Remedy wrapped a hoof about me, holding me back. If the Steel Rangers are assaulting our home, she said with steel in her voice, we might need him.
Well, maybe it's just best we drop you off here, Calamity called back, fixing his steel hose with an even glare. Because I'm heading to Stable 2, and when I get there, I'm planning to kill me a whole lot of Steel Rangers.
Footnote. Level up. New perk, Bone Strengthening Brew. With this perk, your limbs only receive 50% of the damage they normally would. Note. Bone Strengthening Brew and the Cybernetic Implant perk Adamantium Bone Lacing are mutually exclusive.